Tonight, I'd like to talk about one of the most puzzling and definitely the most central texts in our Zen practice, the Heart Sutra. Many of you have noticed that we have returned to our tradition of chanting the Heart Sutra most weeks now. And this is in keeping with what has been done in Zen communities and other Buddhist communities for centuries, for millennia. And it's called the Heart Sutra. The full name is the Heart of Perfect Wisdom. And it really is the heart of the teaching. It's often said that once you understand this sutra, you get it. You get the teaching, because understanding the Heart Sutra makes everything make sense. Now, how can that be? Because when we look at it, it makes no sense. That there are all these things that the Heart Sutra says that are paradoxical. That there's no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. All those things kind of make us sit back and go, wait a minute, what is this? And I know personally, I was put off by it when I started practicing Zen and heard this sutra. So let's delve into it a bit. So it starts out with Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And that's important because the Bodhisattva of compassion is this being who has an infinitely big heart, the capacity to hear the cries of the world, to receive all the suffering. Sometimes referred to as Guanyin, sometimes as Kanzeon, which we chanted tonight. And Avalokiteshvara is talking to Shariputra, who was one of the Buddha's earliest disciples, and basically teaching the insight that the Buddha arrived at that turns our understanding of reality on its head. Avalokiteshvara says, first of all, that all five skandhas are empty. What does that even mean? Now, skandhas are a Sanskrit word for heaps, and there are five heaps in this cosmology, forms and feelings and perceptions and concepts and consciousness. So all the qualities of mind are heaps. And what Avalokiteshvara teaches, what the Buddha discovered, was that all the things that we see in the world are not truly as we see them. That what we see as the 10,000 things, the forms of our life, the people and the cars and the trees and the birds, and the thoughts that flit through our minds, that all of these forms are really just our maps of reality. And so the way we see reality is not what really is. Now, it's helpful, and we'll talk about why it's helpful to have these maps, but the maps are not the terrain. And that's what the Buddha spent his life teaching. And that's the legacy he handed down to us. So what is emptiness? If if these forms, if all the things we see, chairs and houses and people, are empty, what does that mean? But often we think it means they don't exist, but that's not what this teaching says. They exist. They just don't exist as it looks to us. So the way it looks to us is that everything is separate. I'm separate from you. I'm separate from the cushion I'm sitting on. And that these things we see are fixed. I'm a person, I go through time. I was here yesterday, I hope I'll be here tomorrow. So will my cushion. And that they're independent. That all these things are separate. And what the Buddha saw clearly was that this is what our minds do. This is the map that our minds make. But that the terrain of all these 10,000 things isn't separate. It's not fixed. Everything is constantly changing, and nothing is independent. So let's take separate. Let's take me being separate, a separate Bob. Well, it turns out I've got more cells in my body that are not me than are me. All these wonderful microorganisms that are there coexisting with me and actually keeping me alive as I keep them alive. And fixed. It feels to me like I persist through time, but I'm changing every moment. Today I walked by a bookcase where there's a picture of me as a 2-year-old. And I thought, this is perfect because I'm going to talk about no fixed self, no fixed form. And there I was, this 2-year-old. There are probably no molecules in the body of that 2-year-old that still exist in the body of Bob. Am I the same person? So this sense of everything persisting, unchanging, is an illusion. And independence, clearly. No independence. I am not independent of everything around me. I'm breathing in and out. I'm taking in oxygen, giving out CO2, all the things we know that make us completely intertwined and embedded in this world. Well, so what? I mean, why would this be transformative? I mean, aren't these just kind of mental games? But what the Buddha knew, and what we all learn when we examine our hearts and minds, is that these ideas about form, helpful as they are, cause us enormous suffering when we hold them too tightly, when we cling too tightly. So, the idea of a chair, for example, is very helpful because it means I know what's likely to go well if I sit down on it and what I shouldn't sit down on. But think of all the different ways that all the things we call chair that are not the same, practically infinite variety. People, birds, flowers. But the stories that we make up, these forms can cause enormous pain. Think of the story we make up about race. Race is a completely fabricated concept, has no biological reality. Think of all the ways that society organizes itself, makes a war on itself, harms itself, how we harm each other based on this map we've made that we call race. And think of the stories we tell about ourselves. I'm a person who's no good at this. I'm a person who will never be bright enough, who will never have friends, whatever the story might be. And think of the ways that we reduce and confine ourselves based on the mind's capacity to tell stories, to make these maps. And what the Buddha said was that when we can see through these maps, when we see through the forms that are artificial, lots of suffering falls away. So the sutra says, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no seeing, no thinking. But then the sutra goes on to say, no ignorance and also no ending of ignorance. No old age and death, but also no ending of old age and death. Of course there's old age and death. That what this sutra teaches us is that we live on the knife's edge between form, between the 10,000 things that are these helpful maps of the world, and emptiness, and understanding oneness, that we're all constantly changing, completely interconnected, not separate. And the Heart Sutra even says there's no suffering, there's no cause of suffering, there's no ending to it, and no path. Now, those are the Four Noble Truths. So what the Heart Sutra is saying is even the stuff we teach in Buddhism, even the stuff we teach in Zen, that's just concepts, all gradually to be seen through. And the way we see through is through practice. That we can read, and I can talk till I'm blue in the face, but to really understand this in our bones, we practice it, we sit with it. We stand in awe of a flowering tree. We sit and feel the knee pain and don't reduce it to the label of pain, but notice the burning and then the throbbing and then the disappearance, the just this. And so you often hear in Zen the phrase, just this. What it involves is essentially direct perception of what is without concepts. And there are moments in our Zazen where that happens. And that's why practice is always at the heart of this. Reading is good, listening to talks is just fine, but the way we come to know in our bones an experience of reality beyond concepts is through Zazen. And when we do this, then we come to the realization that, as the sutra says, there's nothing to attain. What if we stop grasping for all the things that we grasp for based on our stories? Wealth, fame, trying to reify this thing I call Bob, trying to make him more real by acquiring power, whatever it might be, whatever your fascination might be, what if we stop grasping? And that there is tremendous peace in that, and that too is a core teaching of our way. Now, what flows from this is kind of twofold. Actually, Norman Fisher talks about this. He said, you know, on the one hand, the pressure is off. It means we're interconnected. We're not alone. It isn't all up to us in this world, because it's all interconnected. And we are all just showing up as part of the universe. We are all just, as one teacher used to say, we're just the universe universing, nothing special. And what a relief. But on the flip side, and of course in Zen there's always a flip side, the pressure is on, that everything matters. Everything we do matters, because we are completely interconnected. And so it matters that we strive to do good. We strive to avoid evil, as the precepts tell us to do. And what the Buddha said and what our wise teachers have found is that we can train ourselves in this perspective. We can train ourselves to keep coming back to the recognition, oh yeah, that's my mind telling its stories about the world. And here's just this. Here's what it feels like to feel my heartbeat, to feel my breath going in and out, to listen to the birds. The sutra starts with Avalokiteshvara for a reason, because the perspective of, well, it's all one, there's nothing to attain, could lead us to a sense that nothing matters. And this sutra says, of course it matters. Of course, compassion matters. Compassion for other people, compassion for all beings, compassion for the planet, and compassion for ourselves, because they're the same. And so the Heart Sutra brings together compassion and emptiness, or oneness, which may be the better term for this. And again, I return to Norman Fisher, who says, don't worry if you read this and it sounds like nonsense, that it isn't meant to be a logical text. It's meant to touch your heart. It's meant to be a mantra. So I invite you, perhaps sometime soon as you sit down on your cushion, to take two or three lines and simply use them as a mantra. That what this sutra will do over time is touch your heart. As we say, sometimes opaque to the mind, confusing, but radiant to the heart. And as you use it as a mantra, as you come to really feel the reality of oneness, of interconnectedness, this confusing sutra will come alive and form the heart of your practice. So now, I would love to hear your thoughts about this confusing sutra. Please feel free to step forward, raise your Zoom hand, or just make a wave, and let's have a bit of a discussion.